Screen legend Katharine Hepburn died yesterday at her home in Connecticut. She was 96 years old. Her career spanned more than 60 years. Her most enduring legacy may be the ideals of independence and intelligence she projected both on and off the screen to generations. Pat Dowell reports.
In the 1933 movie Morning Glory, Katharine Hepburn's third film, she played a small-town girl who drunkenly declares to a penthouse full of Broadway luminaries that someday she'll be one of them.
I know that I'm a great actress.
No, no, please be quiet.
I'm the greatest young actress in the world.
No, no, take it.
And I'm going to go on getting greater and greater and greater, you'll see.
Steady, kiddy. You're making a fool of yourself.
I'm not making a fool of myself. Well, listen, you're talking to the greatest actress in the world, and I'm going to prove it.
She did prove it to her peers. Her fellow actors nominated her for 12 Academy Awards. She won a record 4 Oscars for Best Actress, the first for Morning Glory, but she didn't win another one until she was 60 years old. Critic David Thompson, author of the Biographical Dictionary of Film, says that Katharine Hepburn endured not so much because she was a great actress, able to step convincingly into any role, but because she was an enormous screen personality.
I think she played herself. She had a very odd, spiky, very intelligent, attractive yet entirely unglamorous personality. She was very down to earth. She was a Yankee, practical, do-it-yourself kind of person. That showed, I think.
It came from her well-to-do Connecticut family. Hepburn said in her 1991 autobiography, titled Me, that the main gift her parents gave her was herself.
They brought us up with a feeling of freedom. There were no, well, rules. There were simply certain things which we did, and there were certain things which we did not do because they would hurt others. And I think to myself, how I miss you too. I was so used to turning into you.
Her father was a doctor from an old Southern family, her mother a New Englander and a leader in the struggle for women's rights, a cause in which Katharine Hepburn remained active all of her life. Barbara Leeming is Hepburn's biographer.
What's fascinating about Kate herself is that she became the symbol of the woman that her mother had fought to create, the educated, independent woman who could control her own life. And as a star, what Katharine Hepburn represents, and I think always will represent, is the symbol of that modern woman.
She played that woman on screen and on stage many times, but she also played its antithesis, the subservient wife, the unmarried woman ashamed of being single. She played monarchs and a Chinese peasant, and not all of the roles suited her, or the critics. Dorothy Parker once famously wrote of Hepburn on stage that she ran the gamut of emotion from A to B. Hepburn's career faltered in the late 1930s, but she engineered her own comeback with The Philadelphia Story. Jimmy Stewart plays a reporter covering a society wedding. She's the spoiled bride, who calls him a snob.
You're the worst kind there is, an intellectual snob. You made up your mind awfully young, it seems to me.
Well, 30's about time to make up your mind. And I'm nothing of the sort, not Mr. Connor.
The time to make up your mind about people is never. Yes, you are. And a complete one.
You're quite a girl, aren't you?
You think?
Yeah, I know.
Thank you, Professor. I don't think I'm exceptional.
You are, then.
I know any number like me.
Soon after, she was cast with Spencer Tracy in Woman of the Year as a world-famous political columnist who marries a gruff sports writer. On the night she's due to receive an award, she plans to leave their new foster child at home alone. But her new husband insists on staying with the frightened boy.
Sam, we've got to go. Ellen's waiting and...
Yeah, you go ahead. You go ahead. I'll stay with him until he falls asleep.
Sam, don't be idiotic. You simply don't want to come to the dinner. That's why you're putting on this paternal act.
I'm not putting on any act. We accepted a responsibility, didn't we?
But everyone will be looking for you. What shall I say you're doing?
Say I'm at home minding the baby.
Oh, Sam, for heaven's
sake. Tell him anything. I don't care what you tell him. Tell him I had something important to do.
Who would believe that you had anything that was important enough to do to what?
You know, it's too bad I'm not covering this dinner of yours tonight because I've got an angle that would really be sensational. The outstanding woman of the year isn't a woman at all.
Off-screen, Hepburn and Tracy fell in love and lived together until he died in 1967, despite the fact that he was married to someone else the whole time. On-screen, they became Hollywood's premier romantic team in 9 movies. In many of them, her strong female character is cut down to size. But Barbara Leeming says that does not diminish Hepburn's status as an icon of the modern woman.
I don't think that it's so much the individual movies and what was in those movies, but the fact that she never stopped trying something new. She did comedy, but she also did Shakespeare. She was never afraid to fall on her face. She did Eugene O'Neill. She toured Australia with the Royal Shakespeare Company. I mean, she had, of all of the actresses in the history of the movies, probably the most varied and the most daring career.
Katharine Hepburn won her third Oscar for the 1968 film The Lion in Winter. She plays Eleanor of Aquitaine. Anthony Hopkins plays her son Richard. She tries to goad him into seizing the English throne from her jailer and husband, Henry II.
I loved you more than Henry. And it's cost me everything.
What do you want?
I want us back the way we were.
No, that's not it.
All right, then. I want the Aquitaine.
Well, that's the mother I remember.
We can win. I can get you, Alice. I can make the marriage happen. But I've got to have the Aquitaine to do it. I must have it back.
The Lion in Winter was Anthony Hopkins' film debut. He recalls that he and the rest of the cast were nervous about meeting the legendary Hepburn.
I could hear her voice down in the street as she got out of her cab. That voice of hers as she was coming up the stairs, you know, and she came up the stairs and she was dressed like somebody who'd just come out of the jungle. She had a sort of cap on and khaki trousers, and she looked like she'd come out of the African Queen. And she was a formidable presence, and we were introduced to her. She's very direct and bold. She said, "Well, I just saw your film test. Yeah, you're very good. Good."
Hepburn was a demanding co-worker, but Hopkins recalls that she was also generous with her advice.
She said to me one day, she said, "Don't act." I told her, she said, "You don't have to act." She said, "You've got a good body, you've got a good-sized head, and she said, you look good." She said, "Just don't act, just speak the lines." And I couldn't figure that out, but I sensed that she was right. And she said, gave me advice. She said, "Watch Spencer Tracy, watch James Cagney, watch Barbara Stanwyck, watch people like that. She said, watch the best American actors." And she said, "Because they don't act, they just do it."
Katharine Hepburn influenced several generations of actors and inspired 7 decades of fans, says critic David Thompson.
She said, "It's really only because I've lasted so long." There's a certain truth in that. She had become the survivor who had outlived her contemporaries, and she remained so vigorous until really very near the end. And we knew that voice, even when it was quavering a little. And it was a very independent, very tough, and yet quite tender voice at the same time.
The qualities of that voice provide a clue to the contradictions of the woman, the feminist who would and could act out her own comeuppance on the screen, the self-reliant child of active parents who sacrificed much of her social life to nurse Spencer Tracy through illness and alcoholism. For her, acting was an adventure. For him, an escape from himself. She ended her 1991 autobiography with a letter to Tracy, asking whether at last he felt safe.
"Well, you said on this subject, never safe until you're 7 feet underground. But why the escape hatch? Why was it always open to get away from the remarkable you? What was it, Spence? I meant to ask you, did you know what it was? What? What did you say? What did you say? I can't hear you."
For NPR News, this is Pat Dowell in Washington.